Hello, and welcome to Mondays on Tuesdays podcast from Compare Basic. My name is Firecrow Silvernight. I will be your host for the next 20 or so odd minutes. So, I am actually super, super excited about this topic. It is called The Gap, and I'm actually talking about accounting. And the reason I'm so maddeningly, ridiculously, pathetically excited in the light that I am, a broken, starving software engineer is because what I'm talking about explains so much of the collapsing world around me. So when I talk about the collapsing world around me, I am 41 years old, which means that I was 15 years old when the Columbine shootings happened. And since then, there hasn't been a lot to be proud of about being in America. It's just been a string of thing after thing after thing. And I've kind of been wondering, like, okay, so I heard things about the rich getting richer, poor getting poorer in the 90s. And I remember being like, we're going to do anything about that? Really? Are we? And a few things get tossed around. Is it greed? Is it dysfunction? Are we arrogant? And I actually would say that my conclusion to all of those things is it might be greed, it might not be. It might be arrogance, it might not be. What I believe it is a severe level of unpreparedness in the business community. And what I'm particularly talking about is the way accounting models have not modernized to account for the lack of physical assets. The service economy, which is supposedly 70% of the economy now, there's only 30% in physical goods, has a huge problem, which is managing the valuation of a company when your largest expense is salary that yields no asset you can list on your balance sheet. It's a lot scarier to run a business in that situation. I'm going to go through the way this works because it conceptually it's a fascinating example of why if you were to be in the C-level of a company or on the investor or on the board, this is a perfect explanation of why the modern workplace would be terrifying. The update from Compare Basic, this ties a little bit into the subject, is that I have again chosen to deepen the system against the practical advice of my starving artist self. And basically what has happened is I realized developers are the audience I should have been chasing for a while. I also realized that I should have been surfacing the work I was doing on a regular basis because now I'm in a position where I have a fantastically working system, lots of components, and very little to show for it that people can kind of dig into. The naive assumption I made is that people would come knocking on the door when they found out how exciting a thing I was doing, and I could tailor that as like, oh, here's what I should prepare, because I was kind of heartbroken at the very beginning from writing a business plan nobody read. That left a scar. I spent a lot of time on that, and everyone was like, where's your pitch deck? But so the documentation engine is fantastically cool. It uses the Roblink parser to parse the C source code files in the same way that it parses HTML, JSON, HTTP header, eventually other languages. And I realized that I probably should have at least one example of something cool working. And so I decided to upgrade the template system to make the navigation active using the interlocking iter parsers that sit on top of the span system that also incorporate the table system, and it works with the seal higher order object system. I mean, it's a really, really cool example of the symphony working together, and it is digestible, and it is going really well. I'm putting the indexes in. It's blown me away. Frustrating delay again, but hopefully in the next short while, hopefully by the next Mondays on Tuesdays podcast, I'll be able to reach out to developers. Hey, build this on your machine. Take a look at what we're doing. Look at the documentation. And so, again, it feels like, I'm living in a thunderstorm world. It's taking a crap on me. But it is inspiring. And I'm super excited to talk about how accounting has a big gap. So in terms of accounting, I actually think that a number of things that kind of scare people away as being supposedly like way too academic. Oh, I'm not technical. Don't make me feel stupid. Oh, I'm not mathy. Don't talk about math formulas. Oh, I don't really know accounting. Don't talk to me about that. You know, the reality is this: every one of these disciplines is designed to be understood by large amounts of people. And there has been a great amount of care taken in every one of these disciplines to make them understandable by the least common denominator in the room, because accounting is the language of having an understandable business. Mathematics is the language of having an understandable measurement of whatever domain you're in, be that physics, common sense. I think algebra in the very basic formula A equals B plus C, or X equals, I'm not that great at math, but I remember it's the triangle thing where you have any one thing, if you have three things and you know two of them, you can know the third because they're one bucket and you can figure it out. If you have any one thing and there's two unknowns, you cannot figure it out. That's actually a really interesting metaphor for life. When you have a problem and there's too many factors, you don't have to know all the factors. You just have to know enough of the factors that the ones you don't know are small enough that you can make educated guesses. I mean, that's algebra. It's all common sense. And so software engineering is the same way. Software engineering languages and software engineering concepts, there's actually been great care taken to make them explainable, because these are all formats designed for groups to work on together. And so that perception that it's all, you know, an elitist racket that's designed to shut you out is actually very untrue. Believe it or not, the legal world is actually the same way. Legal documents are designed to be understood by a court. They're designed to be interpreted by the signers so that they can go between them. There is some suspicion about attorneys who draw out court cases, or software engineers who draw out software projects for the sake of billing, or accountants who hide financials simply because they don't want their staff to know what is in fact going on in the business. So there is an elitist angle to all of these territories: math, software engineering, accounting, law profession. However, every one of those formats was created and is still maintained and deepened for understandability. So when I got into accounting last year, because I have a business entity, I have to do the accounting bit, I didn't have enough help to have someone else do it. So I was fascinated by how clean the four major statements fit together. And what I started realizing is that there's a really interesting situation that has arisen in service-based companies. Because once you leave the world where you have expenses that are largely physical assets, you have this really interesting thing happens, which is there is a larger gap in time between spending money that you have no way of estimating the value of what happened with that money, and that money generating revenue that comes in that you can list as income for your company. And I'll give a few quick examples, but before I give this example, I need to talk about what I consider the most complex part of accounting, which is depreciation. We've all heard, or at least a lot of, I think it's pretty common to hear the story that, oh, when you buy a new car, it loses most of its value when you drive it off the lot. That is true, and that's a very quick version of what depreciation is. I'm actually going to talk about scenarios where depreciation is more or less, and I'll give the example of something that you could buy from the store that you could return, or you could sell secondhand, and the tiers of value it loses as you use it over time. So if you bought like a USB charging cable and you didn't open it, you would have 30 days to return it to the company for the exact same price. So if you evaluate your personal wealth, you spend $15 on the USB cable, you come home, do you have $15 less of wealth? Or do you just have $15 less of cash and some of your wealth is in an unopened USB cable? Well, the answer is the latter, is that you have, 30 days to return that for the same amount of money if you needed the money back. Now, there are other costs involved. You got to take time to go to the store, and that's the kind of thing that a business would estimate in a situation like this. However, once you open the USB cable box, now you got to sell it secondhand for maybe $10, $5 if you can. And then as you use it and it breaks down, now it's becoming a used cable. Two things are happening. One, you're getting closer to the day when you have to replace it when it has zero value to you. And if it gets scratched or bent or things like that, your ability to resell it secondhand goes down. So this is depreciation. Depreciation is where you have an asset. It is worth 100% of its value in some condition. And when you spend the money, you are not losing any wealth at all. You just now have a physical asset worth the same valuation as the cash that you have spent. The cash that's gone out the door has become a physical asset. Over time, that physical asset will go down, either because it is no longer eligible to be sold at its full price, or it is being used and getting closer to the day when you must replace it and you cannot sell it secondhand. Here's the thing. It's very hard to figure out what the value of that cable is to you. It's a personal item. It's something you like. Maybe it's a fancy color. Maybe it's woven like a corn snake with little patterns in it. Looks nice, makes you feel good. But how do you list that on a financial document? Maybe it's the most perfect balance between, you know, bendy and awkward, and it doesn't twist up, and it charges your phone and you need your phone to work. These are all very, very hard things to figure out. It's a lot easier to say this asset has a resale value of XYZ and it is depreciating on this schedule and we can count on losing X amount of wealth for that reason. Well, let's talk about one more situation. So you are a agriculture company, you buy a tractor. $100,000 tractor, do you have $100,000 less of money? No. I mean, whatever the depreciation on sale is, maybe the tractor is only resellable for $60,000. So when someone comes in and looks at your business and says, what is the valuation of your business? They won't see a $100,000 loss. They will see a $20,000, $30,000, or $40,000 loss, and now an asset is making up the rest of that value. So what happens in a company that has no ability to declare the output that they are spending on money on their balance sheet as an asset? This is what I call the gap. And basically, revenue will come in much, much later from when your software team builds the software. Much, much later from when your prep cooks have prepared the ingredients of the meal tomorrow, even though that's only like a 48-hour delay, and in software it'd be like a 6-month, possibly 9-month delay. When your legal team works on a judgment that may or may not even go in your favor, so there's risk there, technically their hours may be billed to a retainer, and so you have a way of declaring income almost immediately, and so the gap is minimized. But depending on the case that you are making, if it is a commission case, meaning if it's like an injury case and you're expecting, you know, a percentage of the settlement to come to your law firm, the hours of those attorneys, if you're in the UK called solicitors, and paralegals working on this, those hours do not yield something you can put on your financial statements until you actually receive that judgment. And so there's this gap between money going out the door and money coming back in the door that does not have the same certainty that a physical asset would, because the physical asset, the day you buy it, you have an asset value to carry through. So one more example in the case of a restaurant. If you're preparing, let's say you're preparing for a big weekend. Historically, your restaurant has a big weekend, so you make twice as many roast beef the night before, maybe smoked brisket, make a bunch more, you know, prepackaged and pre-cooked meatballs, twice as much sauce, you mix twice as much dough for the bread. You're paying more people to do this, and you're getting ready for a big day tomorrow, and if that big day doesn't come, you're out the risk. But more importantly, the money that you have spent to prepare this food has no resale value. It's not like if people don't show up and buy these meatballs, you can do anything with them. They actually will go bad, expire, and go in the trash. And one of the reasons restaurants are considered such a volatile business is because a lot of the effort that goes into restaurants is in no way resellable or accountable on a balance sheet also a very volatile industry where people, do or don't show up. And so, economically, it's a bit of a mess. It's also a lot of fun to work at. And so software has this all service industry, all service, and by, I'm not talking about hospitality, I'm talking about anything where it's there's no physical good underneath the company. So it kind of makes sense. So two things make a whole lot of sense to me. Number one, it makes sense that the obsession with quarterly earnings is happening the way it is. It also makes sense why layoff season and layoffs are considered a way of rebalancing companies' financials the way that they are, which I think is gross and horrible, but it makes sense in a way that if this model of salary is viewed as lost value because there is no way to account for the value the staff has created between the time the staff has done the work and sales are made. There's no method of evaluating these intangible assets. So, the solution here is really hard to figure out. In terms of software, it's a little easier because it is such a mechanical thing. It would require software engineers sitting down with finance people and defining, we built this thing so that we can either have more flexibility that customers want or more efficiency as we work. We value this as a factor five or whatever. And these are the kinds of conversations that software engineers have themselves about whether or not to refactor something. There's a point system. This is a 5-point ticket. That's a 6-point ticket. Well, 6 points not because they use those Fibonacci things. 5 point would be 5, 8, 13. Anyway. But it also makes sense why Agile was so compelling as a project management framework. Because in the model where you, in the waterfall model where you have people building something for 6 months or a year, and you have salary going out, salary going out, salary going out, the finances of the company looks terrible, just plummeting. And then the product goes out and revenue comes in, 6 months to a year later. Financially, in terms of accounting, this is a maddening proposal. What is much, much easier is to have a working running system that is being upgraded a little bit at a time. So now you have a selling product that is bringing in revenue at the same time that you're paying your staff. And so your company financials have an income and expenditure that can kind of balance out. You could tell a story. Accounting wise, this is much scarier in Waterfall. And Waterfall does have, oh, that was a phone notification that I'm probably not going to edit out of this because, hey, one take recording. So Waterfall does have some issues of projects becoming unnecessarily complex and extra work happening. Agile has problems with short-term thinking, making companies never really amount to much or deliver anything interesting. But the story of why this is so appealing to the business layer makes a whole lot of sense when there is, in fact, no mechanism to list on a company's, financial statements from an asset on the balance sheet, which then would have an impact on the retained earnings schedule, which would have an impact on shareholder equity, which would have an impact on the stock price. As that waterfall project was happening, there would not be amazing assets built in month one or two. Oh man, we really got this pattern down. We got this capability. We have it demonstrated here. We are going to list our software progress so far as having a 30, $300,000 value because we believe it is capable of generating $4 million in sales. And so we will estimate the progress we have made in terms of its potential sale listed as an asset on the balance sheet. This is not commonly done. This is very hard to do. It probably would be challenged by shareholders as like this looks made up. And so without an accounting method to track the actual value that the team is doing, it was much more appealing to just put the sales and the incremental improvements in an overlapping time schedule to avoid that conversation. I just think of the number of times that me and other engineers were like, can we maintain this system, please? No. Can we stop shipping new features for a month or two to take something offline and repair it, which is very practically necessary. You know, every restaurant's got to have some time to close to clean the floors and wash the dishes that were not able to be washed during service, and you know, clean the flat top. You always need downtime in everything. Even the New York City subway system that has many 24-hour trains, if not most of them, the reason that's possible is because most of them have two tracks. There are actually four tracks at all times, two in each direction. Some of them only go to express stations, which is like every three or four stations, so you may have to walk, you know, 20 blocks instead of 10. But they were built at a time when reliability and maintenance was such a priority that the way the New York City subway system can be 24 hours is because they can take any track offline at any time. They don't have to shut down the system to make you walk a little extra to the next express stop. They don't have to take the system offline for you to need to go local and have a shorter, you know, longer commute because the express track is being worked on. And so the New York City subway system has a tolerance where you can take a track offline and leave the system up. And one of the things that I intend to do with Compare Basic is to have research and development separate from what I call product work, which is the composition of existing technology assets into products, such that the research and development can have a maintenance schedule that is entirely separate from the shippable product demands. And while there are tax breaks for research and development departments, it is still, to the best of my knowledge, really, really hard to list the products of research development as an asset until they reach a level of completion where they can be fully audited. So I think that this gap from having a way to define intangible assets explains a number of things. Number one, It explains the obsession with quarterly earnings rather than long-term earnings. Now, you could say this is, you know, greedy people, and yeah, it's part of it. You know, they're probably addicted to money. They might be addicted to money. They might also be snorting heroin in the bathroom. They might not be snorting heroin in the bathroom. They might not only be overwhelmed with greed. They might be facing a situation where the accounting models they have leave them completely unable to argue for actual value. Long-term investment, which has a huge factor on loyalty. I mean, think of what's happening right now with the companies that we are expected to believe will be around for generations. They're laying people off with such veracity, and this has been going on for my entire professional career that really started in the early 2000s. And I think that it's been hard to understand why so many traditional and particularly older business leaders don't understand the lack of participation of younger generations. It's, you know, I hear this quite a bit. Oh man, it's really, everybody who's like under 45 is just like so hard to manage. They just like, you know, they don't care. They tell me they're going on vacation and they just leave tomorrow and we don't know what to do here. In theory, if someone grows up watching their parents rely on a job for a consistent income and then that job breaks that reliance oath and lays them off seemingly without explanation, as a youngster growing up, how much faith would you put in that company and how motivated would you be to follow rules that seem pathetic when you arrived? And that's my age group. I'm about 41. That would be the millennials. If you are of Gen Z, and it's not just your parents who you have watched have, you know, struggle with, you know, believable loyalty of large companies, you've also watched your parents' parents, how much less likely are you to show up and behave? And the obvious conclusion from this perception of companies, you know, big companies thinking everybody is going to want to work with them till the end of time, no matter how they behave, has a real interesting vulnerability for all business, not just big business, small business as well. And what it comes down to is if increasingly younger generations and increasingly all people are choosing to live humbly and not climb the career ladder, not be the go-getters that, you know, they need coming in their doors every day, companies are not just going to potentially run out of customers if they endorse the wrong politics and are the recipient of boycotts. Not only are they going to run out of staff, I think they actually already are. And this is a really weird concept because so many people are laid off and they're trying to find work, and there's all these stories of people trying to find work. But at the same time, I have been seeing for a number of years posts all over social media, particularly LinkedIn, about people being like, you know what? I'm burned out on corporate. I'm moving back to my family's, you know, house in Missouri, and I'm going to help them out with their bookstore and we'll see what happens. Or I'm going to go off, you know, to a small town where I don't have to spend as much money and just quite frankly not participate in the economy anymore. This is incredibly common. And what it means is that the pressure quarterly earnings, or come to a software company will make you hate your own software development skills because we'll never give you the ability to clean anything up. Or come to a law firm will make you work 100 hours every single weekend of your life whenever we have a case because we have no ability to balance out our staffing schedule because we can't declare your efforts as an asset that makes any sense, and our accountants get really nervous before we get a settlement. If big companies run out of staff, you would see something that we might already be seeing, which is actually, ironically, layoffs. Because if they don't have people coming in the door to keep them functioning, to chase the operations that they need, it's very unclear, and this is a bit theoretical, a bit conspiracy theory. I'm just another person on the internet saying stuff for the most part. A lot of it's based on my personal experience and stories that I follow. And some of it's like concepts. I mean, the depreciation story is that I'm making that up. That's, you know, that's depreciation. But if in theory large companies were to begin running out of staff, and I've already actually heard one conversation from someone who said that they are getting concerned that AI will replace juniors and they won't have that pipeline. And someone else, someone online Reddit was saying that they're actually outsourcing senior positions overseas to India now. And if like the VP and like SVP level is in India, who is training the managers, you know, stateside in the US? And the answer I have for this is this actually looks like large companies have already realized that they are not receiving a crop of youngsters to keep the show going, that they have broken the loyalty oath. And I trace this back not just to bad behavior and greed and my joke about them snorting drugs in the bathroom potentially. I actually attribute this to a failure to be prepared in realizing, wow, you know, the world is becoming virtual. We need an accounting method to explain this. Because the idea, I'm planning to be a business owner of many, many people. I don't necessarily want to be CEO. I actually have emails dating back to like a year ago when I was looking for someone else to be CEO because I'm not sure that's a role I will actually excel in. The board structure will be kind of interesting with Seriously Human, and there's a maddening amount of things to iron out. But I do intend to be a business owner and do businessy things. And when I look at this situation of needing to explain my financials when there is people poking at keyboards, writing things on whiteboards, and that money is just leaving, and there's no way to account financially for what they did all day, it's terrifying. And it explains a lot. It terrifies me, because if this is actually true, then we are so far behind in terms of bringing sanity back to the economy. But it also, I don't know, it does kind of light the flame of a small kernel of forgiveness for me, because it kind of makes me realize that the crustiness and bad behavior of the business world that has always been a fixture of my professional years, I mean, you know, from, you can just stack up a whole bunch of things. You have Columbine shootings, lose faith in, you know, American culture and American education. Then you have weapons of mass destruction that never happened. You kind of lose faith in the American government and our foreign policy. Then you have the 2008 crash. You kind of lose faith in, well, everything else. And so there's been all this like losing faith in everything. And I kind of wonder if when the manufacturing era wound down, people like, oh, manufacturing jobs are gone, this is going to be really bad for the economy, there was actually something that was also really bad for the economy and actually quite worse, which was that accounting practices did not modernize to give business leaders the tools to properly perceive the actual value of their businesses. And that's been in the works for like 30 to 50 years now as we move to a majority service economy. And so, you know, greed, corruption, horrible ethics, yeah, totally, totally happened. But also, this business world has been sort of fighting with one hand tied behind his back because it's been completely unable to make sense of heads or tails of the value being produced by people. So, on a more positive note, possibly salesy note, one of the things I would love to do is use computer technology to begin calculating the valuation of these intangible assets, midway projects. You know, what did your staff, what was the value of what your staff did last time, and can that be used as an estimation? Because we now have computer technology that can actually do this. That's the interesting thing about where we are. We've lost the physical assets to balance out balance sheets, but we do have computer technology fully capable of visualizing this and creating inputs for this. So after the initial product of email to site, which is also kind of a blog publishing chat conferencing thing that will take shape as it actually begins being constructed, but likely the next target for Compare Basic Products is accounting software. Hopefully some managerial accounting, visualization, operation stuff where you can actually get ahead and have an idea of, you know, demystifying this gap concept, because I think it's a really big deal. As always, if you like the kind of things I talk about and are interested in what exactly it is I'm talking about every week that I'm working on, head on over to comparebasic.com. I have links to many, many places where I talk about many, many things. And I hope you have a great week, because the middle of the winter is not always great. And the term great has kind of been lit on fire these days. So I'm just going to say, I hope it's a good week, and I will see you next week.